Okay, Yitzchak Avinu is very successful. His neighbors don't like it. Away he is sent. He continues to persevere. And in the end, the very same people that sent him away sue for peace. In the fifth reading of Parshas Toldos, we open at the concluding scene of the peacemaking. Not peace through weakness, not peace through capitulation, not peace through surrender, but peace through strength, and peace that happens when Yitzchak holds his line and doesn't move for anybody. And then when all that works out just fine, Vayaslahem Mishta, he makes for them a meal. Fifth reading, chapter 26, verse 30. Vayechlu vayishtu. Why did they have a meal? The Radak says, very simple. At this point, good feelings have been engendered. And this is l'kayim ahava, to make sure that the good feelings linger on. The Gemara says that the best way to nurture and develop good feelings is with food. G'dayla l'gima shemekarevas. So people break bread together. It gives a sense of camaraderie, a sense of friendship, a sense of community. So they break bread, vayashkinu vabeker, and then they spend the night in Yitzchak's inn. Vayishavu ish la'echav, they swear to one another. Vayishalchem Yitzchak, Yitzchak sends them off. Vayelchu me'itay, although he sends them off, he says, that's the end of this little visit. You must go now. They don't leave with any kind of bad feeling. On the contrary, vayelchu me'itay v'shalom, they leave him in a sense of inner peace. Now, who swore? It doesn't say Vayishavu Shnehem, which would mean Avimelech and Yitzchak, but it means it's plural, Vayishavu. And therefore, the Emek Dover says that there was ministers, senior members of Avimelech's cabinet and government. They all swore to be friendly with Yitzchak. And the Radak says the lengthy description of their taking leave is the idea of Leviah. Yitzchak walked them, escorted them out, as we learned in the previous parashiyot, that hospitality, defined Abrahamically, necessarily includes an escort that indicates that the visit was appreciated, and that the guest is valued, and the person doesn't leave feeling kind of empty-handed, or they're glad they got rid of me. And so, at this pinnacle of Yitzchak's career, where Yitzchak has stood his ground, continued to persevere, the wells they filled, he redug. He went and dug new wells. At this point, on this very day, Vayi Bayoim Ahu, it was on that day, Vayaveyu Avde Yitzchak, the servants of Yitzchak came. Vayagiduloi, and they reported to him. Al Oides HaBe'er Asher Chafaru, with regard to a well that they had dug. Vayoimru Loi, they said to him, Matzanu Moim, we've hit water. Found water. Water is a source of life. What is a good thing? That's what the purpose of digging the wells. Bayoimahu, on that very day, Ramban tells us, Miyad, immediately, once they had left him, this was the next moment, Yitzchak gets the good news. And this well that they found, Bayikra Isa Shiva, they called the well seven, or oath. Why was it called Shiva? Al-Kain Shem Ha'ir Be'er Sheva. Therefore, the name of this city is Be'er Sheva Ad Hayom Hazeh, until this very day. So Rashi says, calling the name of the city Shiva, what is the point of Shiva? He says, this is Al-Shem HaBris. This is with regard to the covenant that was struck between them, the peace deal. They were going to be friends from now on. And it happened through an oath. And an oath is a Shavua. So that's why they kind of named this well. Since the well came immediately on the heels of the deal that was struck, of the oath that was entered into, that's why they called it Shiva. The Sefarno says, well, if you do the math, it's also the seventh well, because Avraham Avinu dug three wells, Yitzchak redug those wells. Yitzchak dug three wells, the third being Rehovos, as we learned yesterday, symbolic of the third Beis HaMikdash, and now a seventh well. So Shiva, it's a play on words. It's also the seventh well, which is really interesting because in Jewish history and Torah literature, the number seven is very special. That's the idea of Kol Hashvi'in Chavivin. Shabbos is the seventh day, Moshe Rabbeinu is the seventh generation, and so on and so forth. So we have this idea of the seven, and therefore the Torah says, Al Kain, as such, Shem Ha'ir Be'er Sheva, the name of the city is Be'er Sheva, Ad Hayem Hazeh, until this very day. And as you know, there is a city in the Holy Land until this very day that is called Be'er Sheva. And we presume that it is approximately exactly on the same spot where the original city of Be'er Sheva was. Now this is a bit of an odd verse, because it sounds from the simple reading of verse 33 that it was in the days of Yitzchak because of the oath that was struck, or deal that was entered into, because of the seventh well that was dug. That's why the city is called Be'er Sheva. No, ask me the question.
Be'er Sheva was
exactly where Avraham Avinu lived. Be'er Sheva has been Be'er Sheva already. So what does it mean, Al-Kain Kara, Shem Ha'ir Be'er Sheva? That sounds very strange. So the Ibn Ezra says, this is merely for emphasis, it was in that very same place that they came and sued for peace in the time of Avram. And as we learned yesterday, Avimelech could be the same Avimelech, or it could be a father and a son. Avimelech, or it could be just a successor. It wasn't the same family even. It was like the idea perhaps of Pharaoh. So Pharaoh is always the same Pharaoh. So it's an institution. People who occupy the Pharaoic position, but wasn't necessarily the same person. Here too, Avimelech can also be the Pelishti name for a king. But at any rate, the fact is, it's where Avram had peace, it's where Yitzchak had peace. And therefore, and that's where the oath was taken, so this really ratified, emphasized, and strengthened the name Be'er Sheva that already had pre-existed. The Radak maintains, who says it was the same city? Number one. Who says? We don't know the same city. Number two, he says, this was a much bigger deal. And because this was a bigger deal, that's why this stuck. The first name didn't stick. Yeah, it was called Be'er Sheva. Avram called it Be'er Sheva. People didn't call it Be'er Sheva. It would not have stood the test of history. It would not have stood the test of time. Eventually, that name would have long been forgotten. However, this name has not been forgotten and has endured the sands of time. And that's why we say Al-Kain. It was because of the second story that it was called Be'er Sheva. The Sepharno has a very unique way of reconciling the seeming problem or challenge. He says, in the days of Avram Avinu, if you will take a look at the pasuk, it says Be'er Shova, with a komatz, Shova. Here it's called Be'er Sheva. This is the difference in a komatz and a segel. Komatz is O, Shova, and segel is E, Sheva. So what difference does that make? Well, he says, in the days of Avram, it was only called Be'er Shova, and that was by virtue of the idea of the oath that was taken. However, says the Sepharno, here there is now a number of things that are being commemorated and spoken of. Amongst them, the seventh well. So Sheva includes seven also. Shava, only an oath. Sheva, a well too. And because it was an idea of Yitzchak that really affixed this name with permanence, that's why we call it Be'er Sheva, for multiple reasons, which once again kind of emphasized to us the importance of the number seven and how the number seven shows up in various surprise locations with an emphasis on that being of a special endearment and a special relationship with it. Now, all of this really is but a preamble into the Hogarth school. And that takes us to Esav now. So Yitzchak is successful. And this is the conclusion, really, of Yitzchak's narrative. Yitzchak's battles, Yitzchak's issues, Yitzchak's challenges, they're found in the third to fifth readings of Parshas Toldos. That's it. That's it. You know, we will not hear more about Yitzchak insofar as Yitzchak himself is concerned. Now we will hear about Yitzchak, but this will be about Yitzchak dealing with Yaakov and Esav. And in the previous Parsha, we heard about Yitzchak being a good son or following his father. So this is the small few vignettes we have about Yitzchak, which are primarily about well digging. And we talked about the meaning of that yesterday. This carries into the fifth reading, and it concludes here at verse 33. And so, we now return to the family of Yitzchak, for the measure of a man's success is not his own personal achievement, but rather what is his legacy? What does he leave afterwards? Well, Yitzchak had children, and the children's name are Esav and Yaakov. Verse 34, Vayhi Esav ben Arbarim Shana. At this point, Esav had matured, grown into his newfound position. Esav is no longer a child. He no longer lives in anybody's shadow. He's 40 years old now. Vayikach Isha, he decides to get married. He takes a woman. Her name is Yehudit. Nice name. Nice Jewish name. Bas Be'eri, the daughter of Be'eri Achiti. So here, clearly Yitzchak didn't feel the need to send anybody to find a bride for his children. Anyway, it would have been a joke for Esav. Nobody's finding him any brides. Esav found his own brides, other people's brides. That was another story. Esav now gets married, and he marries this Yehudis. And one wife is not enough for Esav. Previously, although Avram does marry again, it's only in the absence of having children and with a desire to try to bring children into the world. For Avram, the fact that he took a second wife or a concubine is a functional thing. Yitzchak, of course, is the perfect marriage. There is no concubine, chas v'shalom. There is no additional wives. No need for it. There's no need for it. It's not a Torah thing. I've heard people say many silly things, like the Torah endorses multiple spouses. The Torah allows for it under extenuating circumstances. The Torah does not endorse it. It's not a good idea. It's not the right thing. Yaakov got stuck with the situation. He didn't look for a situation. Esav is another story. He looked for the situation. He had a double wedding. He married this lady, Yehudis, and he married Basmas. She's the original Spice Girl. And she was the daughter of Elon Hachiti. So what's going on here? Why is the Torah telling us this business of Esav? He marries such fancy names his women have. One is Yehudut, she's like the first Jewess, and the other one's a Spice Girl, and like sounds like Kiddush and Havdalah together. And what really is going on over here?
Sounds like Beyonce.
Sounds like Beyonce, huh? So,
you know it.
So we have to understand this, and here we go to Rashi. Rashi takes us on a very, very interesting little journey. Ben Arboim Shana, the key that tips us off to the iceberg is the idea of Esav's age. Why are we emphasizing Esav's age? Was Esav that chaste? Did he behave properly till 40? He didn't mess around, and now it's 40, you have to get a wife. So this is what tips us off. Why did Esav get married? It waited exactly 40 years. Just so happened. That's when Yitzchak got married. It says Rashi, Esav hayo nimshol chazer. Esav had a piggish posture. He is the original chazer. What's a chazer? Mm-hmm. What's unique about the pig? How come the pig has the unfortunate mazel of being the symbol of non-kosher? The pig. Everybody knows the pig. People say, I don't eat pork. Yeah, but you eat cheeseburgers. I don't eat pork. That's like, really, what difference does it make between cow meat that wasn't slaughtered and pork? It's both not kosher. But in people's heads, they have this thing about pork. Do you know why Chinese food was popular for Jewish people in the 1920s and 30s? Christmas. Because, long before there was an issue. They came to these shores. They came from Germany. They came from Lithuania. They came from White Russia. They came from Poland. These were places where Jews were beaten, killed on a regular basis. There was no possibility of real assimilation. It's not like the German invited you to have some wurst with him, or come, have bacon and eggs. It made them uncomfortable. It reminded them of the things they ran away from. However, the Chinese community was an immigrant community. They also were a minority. They also weren't too much beloved. And the nice thing about the Chinese food for them was they couldn't see the pork. It was cut up in little pieces in the egg rolls. Understand? So it didn't feel like you're doing this big, terrible sin, eating a big, thick pork. It's an egg roll. They didn't know to. So it was like easier. They didn't want to follow the Torah. They wanted to run away from Yiddishkeit. It was like a certain discomfort from your youth, you know. The pig represented something. But the Chinese took that stigma away, right? In little pieces. So it wasn't, they didn't feel you're doing a big Aveda. I'm not wrong about this. So Esav was like a chazer. Shenemar, it says about the pig, and this is found in the 80th Psalm, verse 14, it says, Yichar semenu chazer miyar. The wild pig, the boar, comes out of the forest. So, but the chazer is yichar semenu, he's like cutting the leaves. He's like, he cuts away the leaves in the vineyard. So this is, of course, a mushal. It's a metaphor for Amalek, actually, who is a grandchild of Esav. And what does this mean? So the Medrash explains to us that Chazer Azed, this Chazer, Kishuhu Sheichev, when he lies, Poishet Tlofav, he spreads his hooves. Loimar, as if to say, Ru'u Sha'ani Tahor. Look, I have the sign of purity. Look, he says, see, I got cloven hooves. That's how it happens to be. The posture, the pig's posture is that he's always showing his cloven hooves, as if he's showing off his cloven hooves, which makes him half kosher. But of course, you can't be a little bit pregnant and can't be half kosher. So the fact that he's half kosher is even more dangerous than non-kosher. Because not kosher is just not kosher. But half kosher, you might think he actually is kosher. And precisely because the pig seems to be half kosher is exactly why it's so dangerous.
Like an egg roll.
Like an egg roll. Look, I'm pure. I'm showing you. I'm displaying my beautiful kosher hooves. Kach elu alufi Esav. These are the seed of Esav that historically goizlin v'chomsim umarem atzam ksherim. They rob, cheat, steal, and yet present this image of high morality. Sound familiar? It's the fine dimension. We're the good people. Behind the back do all kinds of illegal things, but supposedly the good people. The people who worry about the underdog, who are concerned with social responsibilities. It's very deceptive. And this is what Esav was. Kol arbaim shana haya Esav tzad nashim. Esav was basically worked in Hollywood. He was a rapist. He took advantage of women, ravished them, did all kinds of terrible things, using his power, using his charisma, to put women in positions where they could have said no, should have said no, maybe weren't able to say no. And Esav had his way, and he did as he pleased. And incidentally, they weren't single girls either. It was mitachas ba'alehim. Esav had a fetish for married women. That's what he liked. Uma'ana Esav, he would abuse them. And then Esav, the abuser of women, Esav, who had his way, all kinds of ways. Then he came along at 40, and he put on a big gartel and a big kapata, and he came to his father, and he said, Papa, you know, I've been thinking, now I'm 40 years old. So he said, Mem, he's 40 years old. He said, I know you got married at 40. I should probably do the same thing, right? I'm just got to be like you, Dad. And he gave this pious image. And so Esav's emphasis on 40 was actually trying to play this game and making it seem as if he was a very pious individual. But no, that was not the case at all. Now, incidentally, who are these women? Who is Yehudis? And who is Basmas with these very nice sounding names? So the Medrash tells us that wasn't their real name. Esav gave them new names for the marriage. And I'm not sure what he told them or how he convinced them to do this, but he wanted his parents, and the parents, the wedding invitation he showed his parents, look, it says, my wife is a big Jewess. Her name is Yehudis. But in fact, she was a big Evedes Avedes Zara. She was a huge pagan idolater, but he named her Jewess. And then the next one he talked about, she's like spices. She's so sweet as sugar, but it wasn't the case at all. As the next verse says, Vatihiena meyisruach li Yitzchak ulirivka. These wives were of great angst, of great pain, in turmoil and inner anguish to both Yitzchak and Rivka. As Rashi tells us, meyisruach loshen hamroas ruach. They destroyed any kind of tranquility, you know, the opposite of nachas. Like you were rebellious. Kol ma'aseim. These women were anything but Yehudis and Basmas. Everything they did was lahachis liitzav and liitzchok Rivka. Everything they did was to spite Yitzchok and Rivka. Shahaya evdes avedes zara in the house of Yitzchok and Rivka, in the compound of what was once Avram and Sarah's area. What were they doing? Worshipping idols. And yeah, there was spice, but it was incense for idols. And there was no Yehudis over here. The polar opposite was the case. So actually, it was a good shidduch. They fit very nicely with for Esav, because this is who Esav was. And they didn't play his game, but they did adopt the name. So it was a nice Jewish names. But they did not behave in a Jewish fashion at all.
Is this the first time that Yehudi is referred to in Tanakh as for Mordechai?
A person to be called Yehudi is Mordechai. We were not known as Jews until the end of the Babylonian exile. And the reason the Medrash tells us is that Mordechai refused to bow to idolatry. So the idea of Yehuda, Hapam Oides Hashem, now I acknowledge God, is this idea of refusing to acknowledge other deities, other forces or powers to be, but instead only to focus on Hashem.
So how did, you know, to name her Yehudis at this point?
So the meaning of the name is an old meaning. The meaning meant what it meant, same way Leah knew to name her son Yehuda. It was, they spoke Hebrew. And this was the point. Esav knew how to name his wife in a way that made her sound as if she denied idolatry and embraced the God of Israel. But that was furthest from the truth.
Who was she in reality?
We're going to learn later. Later we're going to have clarity on who she was. When Esav gets married again, there Rashi spills a fair bit of ink on telling us who these people were. Not righteous women, by a long stretch. So this is the story of Esav. Now let's take a look. There's a fascinating beer from the Rebbe on this Esav's piggish posture. Esav the Hogsworth. Page Shin Mem Vav. Simcha Vav. So the Rebbe opens this commentary on what we just read from Rashi with a mimer, with a Hasidic discourse of the Alter Rebbe. Admura Zakin Mevayer, the Alter Rebbe explains, and this is found in one of the Alter Rebbe's short Maimarim, where the Alter Rebbe explains knotty problems or issues that find crop in the Bible. Alter Rebbe explains it very, very short, succinct, mystical fashion. The Alter Rebbe there says, Sheyeshna Hevdil Bein Birurei V'Zichuchei Shel Esav Al Yedei Yaakov. There's a big difference between the way Yaakov Avinu had to deal with Esav LeBirurei V'Zichuchei Shel Lavan to the way Yaakov had to deal with Lavan. Now the words Birur and Zichuch come from the concept of refinement. It comes from the notion of dealing with a mixture of all kinds of things on your plate, and you have to pick out what's good. So Avedas HaBirurim is like on one of the things you're not allowed to do on Shabbos is something called Meleches HaBoider. For example, a person were to hand you a plate of nuts and bolts, you know, like a, and you got to pick out the nuts from the bolts, you know, this separation. So the idea of Zichuch is perhaps best encapsulated with the metaphor of the crucible, which is a mechanism that would heat the material up into extraordinary heights, and what happens then is that the toxins would be smelt or get burnt off, and in the smelting process, what's good would emerge. So, for example, diamonds in the rough have to go through a smelting process, and the silt and the soil, the rocks, the things which aren't diamond, actually get burnt and destroyed. And what's left? The diamond. When they pull gasoline out of the ground, that's essentially how they do it. The oil in places like Saudi Arabia, they just basically stick a pipe in the ground, the oil comes out, but that oil is not going to work in your car. In fact, it would destroy your car if you pumped it straight in. What do they need to do? They need to refine the oil so that it can actually be used. And that some of that happens through a process of burning. That's why we have these images of this oil fields with fires. The fire is burning off the toxins. And so it is oftentimes in situations in life. We have a situation where there's lots of imperfections and lots of good things. We have to kind of straighten things out, get rid of the bads, so we're left only with the good. Yaakov has challenges. And the reason his challenges is not because Hashem loves to torment Yaakov, it's because Yaakov has to extract the sparks of the good stuff. But it does not come easy. In order for Yaakov to take out what is good, he has to contend with what is not good. And that's a process, oftentimes a painful and a difficult process. There is good energy in Esav. It's just very deep. You have to dig very, very far to get it. That is one of the metaphors of Yitzchak's well digging. He was always digging to reveal the good, but you have to dig and dig and dig until you get there. And Esav, deep, was buried so far below the surface, even Yitzchak, the proverbial master well digger, couldn't dig deep enough. The only one who in the end was successful with Esav was Yaakov, but not in Esav's lifetime. In the future progeny of Esav, there were several good people who they were able to extract to join the Jewish people from the family of Esav, but that was how that happened. That scene was set by Yaakov. It was Yaakov's efforts that set the scene for a future redemption of the sparks of the good parts of Esav. And with Lavan, there was also good things. I mean, Rachel and Leah, two of our Emoyas, they come from the house of Lavan. Even Bill and Zilpah come from Lavan. So this is not a bad, those are good things, but I had to get out of the house of Lavan. If you remember, last week we learned about extracting Rivka from the house of Besuel. That's this idea. So Yaakov has these struggles. And in these struggles, he's busy trying to refine the situation to extract the good from that which isn't. So the Alter Rebbe says, what's the difference between Esav and Lavan? Lavan hoya ramai. Lavan was a master of deception. And who did Esav take after? His wonderful uncle. But with regard to Lavan, Lavan made himself out to be a friend, not a foe. When Yaakov came, Laban was very friendly. He says, I care about you, but I take care of you. Oh boy, did he take care of him. So Hayatzarach lehis gabed olav, Yaakov had to kind of outsmart him, outfox him, v'derech mirma v'hischakmas, using all kinds of clever and very, very careful strategies to be able to work around Laban. V'lachain, therefore, nimshecha ma'avak negdei zman rav. It took a long time until Yaakov was actually able to extract himself and extricate himself from Laban's clutches. That was 21 years. Esav lo mazos, however, Esav, who showed his colors early on, heres kavanasi arab goli, after the story with the blessings, he said openly, I have no need for my brother. I intend to murder him in cold blood, and that's going to be the end of that. And Yaakov knew what he's dealing with. So that was a quick shootout. V'lochein nitzach ha'isi Yaakov b'techz man kotzer. Later on, Yaakov returns. 21 years later, Esav is still nursing the old grudges, the same hatred. He wants to kill Yaakov. Yaakov has that fateful meeting. He wrestles with an angel one night, and it's done. The whole thing is done. Next, the last time he sees Esav. Esav says, come, let's go for a trip together. He says, you go. I'll be there. When to be there? In a few thousand years, he's coming. It's over. The whole thing is like... And with Laban, it went for 21 years. The Alter Rebbe says, that's because Esav was... Oh, he showed his colors. And because Laban was deceptive. This is how the Alter Rebbe explains the fact that our galut is so long and bitter, whereas previous galuyot, Galus Mitzrayim, 210 years, the really bad time, was about 80 years, and Galus Bavel, 70 years, and here we are, now rounding the corner, Rachman Otzlan, 2,000 years already. Doesn't make any sense. Like, if Galus, a 2,000-year odyssey, who ever heard of such a thing? So this Galus is in a way that the Ra is Nister Umechases Atzmei. The evil is not easily seen, especially in today's day and age. Many people make out as if they are our friends. There aren't that many neo-Nazis in the closet to tell you openly they hate you. But when push comes to shove, and when the surface gets shaken up, something goes wrong, all of a sudden, these people reveal the true colors. But it's simmering beneath the surface oftentimes. Like it says in the Gemara in Yuma, the early generations, that their sins were overt and obvious, so then their time, or the time that they had to suffer for the sins, was also very obvious. The later generations, the last generations, our sins are not easily identifiable. It's all about subtleties. Ah, when it's about subtleties, it's very hard to make an end of a situation because it's subtle. Little details. You never seem to be finished with it just quite. And therefore, the end just isn't yet in sight. Now, if you're following what we just learned, how do you square that with the Rashi we just learned? You're telling me that Esav was openly aggressive, openly hostile. Laban was deceptive. With Laban, it took 21 years because of his deception. With Esav, because he was overtly and obviously hostile. That's why it was a quick encounter. We just learned that Esav is the master of deception. We just learned that Esav is he's the guy. He's the hog. He's the pig. He's playing this game of showing his cloven hooves. I'm really kosher. How does that work? On the contrary, Esav is the master of deception. The present Golos is called Golos Edom. Who is Edom from? Esau. According to the Alter Rebbe, the Birur Shel Esav, that the time of Esav was supposed to go quick. What's going on? That this Golos should have been over. 1, 2, 3. Because Esav is overt, obvious, didn't play any games, supposedly, and then it's not that way at all. Here we are, Golos Edom, the Esav Golos, and we struggle and struggle and struggle this 2,000 years, and we still don't see an end in sight. Yesh Leimar, so the Rebbe therefore says, there's got to be more to this. There's something else, there's a piece of the thesis that hasn't yet been developed, that hasn't been presented to us. Sha'asiba ne'utza bekach, that the reason must be there's two Esavs. There's the Esav biyachas leYitzchak, the Esav the way he was towards his father, and then there's the Esav the way he was towards Yaakov. The Esav to Yaakov was, I'm killing you. I want you dead. He was a neo-Nazi. The Esav, he was overt. Straight up. No holds barred. Ah, the Yitzchak was another story. Towards his brother Jacob, Abnam, he didn't hide his intentions. He was very clear about it. He said exactly what he's going to do. You want to know what the jihadists are planning? Listen to them. They're saying it openly. But in the West, no, it can't be they said that. They said it, but they don't mean it. They must be joking. Why would you think he's joking? The guy is screaming like a maniac, like a lunatic. He's brandishing a sword in the house of worship. He's talking about cutting you down. Nah, don't be silly. He's a good guy. He means well. I spoke to him. He said he means well. He said what he means. He said he wants. He called you vermin and filth. He wants to cleanse the Temple Mount of you. He said what he wants. The Western mind can't adjust itself. Can't be. So here, Esav says open what he wants. By the way, the jihadists, they're also Esavites. Don't fool yourself. It's not Yishmael. Even though Muhammad took the name of Yishmael, it's not true. Ibn Ezra says, Reiv Teshve Elam. The vast majority of people in the Middle East, he says, they are the seed of Esav. This is all Esau. It's just Esau comes in many colors. All Esau. It's all Amalek. Same Amalek. The same. And that's open. V'lechein Yaakov is gabed alav. Yaakov was able to overcome that very, very quickly. Aval b'yachasei l'Yitzchak, when he did that with Yitzchak, l'ezu b'vach asa esnag b'mirma, not only Esav covered his tracks, not only Esav didn't want his father to know who he really was, he was more deceptive than the greatest crook of all time. The greatest business Houdini man was Lavan. Lavan could bring you a woman and you married her sister and you don't know how that happened. This was Lavan. He was the master of camouflage, smokescreen, and deception. He was the original snake oil salesman. Nobody could get, you couldn't get your hands on this guy with Lavan. Master of deception. And yet, when it came to deception, the nephew did it better. He outfoxed, he outpaced his own uncle. He was a better cheater, liar, and master of camouflage. Rama Usa Shalavan was Pshehistir Sara Shabbat Ibn Yaakov. What was Lavan's evil? Lavan's evil was he concealed his intentions. Only in a moment of truth he said, I could have killed you all. But that was in a moment of truth. Otherwise, he said in the same sentence, and I came to hug you and kiss you. He's going to kill us. Why can't hug us and kiss us? He says, you didn't allow me to hug you, and I should have killed you all. Sounds like a raving lunatic. But this is, Lavan was that ever lying, deceptive individual. So that was Lavan. Avuloy nisa lahavlit b'myuchadis kashrusay. Lavan never wore a bekesher. You understand? He didn't dress up in Haredi clothes, make him believe that he was very religious and very, very pious. He was, you know, he looked like Lavan, but he claimed not to hate you. But Esav is much worse. Esav was the jihadist to wear a shtreimel. Instead, this guy came with long payas. He made himself like he was the most pious individual. He had to get married like his father got married. Oh, dad got married at 40. I'm going to get married at 40. You rapist. You'll be an abuser. You will be a star in Hollywood, Esav. What are you talking about? You're Mr. Pious. Yeah, Esav, he played that game. He concealed all his evil before Yitzchak. And not only he concealed his evil, but Nisa Lahavlit es Kashrusay, he sought to demonstrate his righteousness. He sought to wear this cloak of piety. He made himself as holy, righteous, and good, like the Chazer who sits with and shows you his hooves. Now we can understand what's going on here. Golus Edom. This is indeed the galus, the exile of Edom. This is the Esavite situation we deal with. But kedei levatlas rama usay shel Esav, in order to undo or get past the deceptive, the smokescreen, the camouflage that Esav throws up, yesh tzeirich ba'avoda raba. That's really hard, very difficult. Oid yoser mizoy hanechutza lebitl rama shel Lavan. This is even more difficult than the struggling we had with Lavan. Because Esav's deception is far more pernicious and far worse and far more subtle than even the lies and the cheating of Lavan. And now you know who your friends are and who your friends aren't, or at least you know that you got to be very careful when you move forward, because who knows? As they say, Nishta Pashat HaMaisa.